Today on the Red Patriot Show, I'm happy to have on Nurse Penny to talk about effective COVID-19 treatments, evil vaccines, and medical hypocrisy. Just a little about Penny. She graduated from Eastern Kentucky University in 2002 from the School of Nursing, and since then has worked as a critical care unit nurse, as well as home health nurse, a nurse at summer camp, and as an adjunct professor at three area technical colleges. After being assaulted by a patient in 2012, causing a career-ending injury, she retired and lives in Kentucky, where she provides health coaching and education on how to support the immune system and maintain a healthy lifestyle.
Yeah. Well, I mean, all the people that you've been seeing on your end, I mean, that have been having all these vaccine, like, adverse reactions and side effects, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. When you look at the numbers, I mean, they're just astronomical when you compare them to, you know, even all of the vaccines together, the amount of injuries and side effects. And, you know, the FDA keeps trying to play it off as, oh, you know, the most common are fever, body aches, chills. And I'm like, oh, yes, this is true. But that doesn't mean the other things don't happen. And what's interesting is they give you the vaccine. And in young people, especially, it seems what happens is they get all the symptoms of COVID. They're sick for four or 5 days. And then they get better. And I'm like, why would you risk a vaccine? I mean, if that's what it's like, this is COVID, just get it and be done with it. And I was telling, I had a nurse reach out to me, and she said that her fellow nurse just got all over her because she wasn't yet vaccinated. And she said, you know, it's you guys that are spreading the virus, and you're causing all of these, you know, you guys cause Delta. And I'm like, whoa, hold the phone. So I've got my Substack thing, and I get in there, you know, because they're calling the unvaccinated murderers, and you know, they keep saying that the vaccinated have to be protected. And I'm like, wait a minute, I thought the vaccine was supposed to protect you. So why do the protected need protecting from the unprotected? That doesn't make sense. And so I told her, I said, the thing with this whole unvaccinated started Delta is BS, because last October, Delta, you know, came up in other countries. It was around before any of us were vaccinated. It's just now making its way over here. And what's interesting is, so I was explaining to people, you know, we're seeing all of the vaccines really leaky at this point. That means that though it may help, and it looks like it does help avoid really severe symptoms for some people, it just doesn't last. Even at like 3 and 4 months, it's falling off. And that's in young people. When you look at older people, who are the people we were, you know, a young person. And I do think they kind of unfairly play this down on the right. So they're like, well, 99.99% of people survive COVID. True. But they're forgetting about all the people who have long COVID. And that is something we have to think about. You know, I'm like, I don't think that means you need to go and get vaccinated. But it definitely speaks to, let's get aggressive with early treatment, so we don't have people that are chronically disabled from this virus. And I think they act like all of these things are unique to COVID. And well, you know, it's just like how they count cases. So, I mean, I worked through SARS-CoV-1, MERS, H1N1, and Ebola. And we never, like, my kids, all three got H1N1. And H1N1 was far more likely to kill somebody under 60 or a child than COVID ever will be. And I think my kids' school closed for 4 or 5 days because, you know, they had so many people infected, they couldn't open up. But then, and my kids all got it, and I got them through it just fine. And so my son and I were talking about this, and he said, we were going to get together for this big family birthday party because we hadn't had a party in forever. And we're like, we'll just do all the birthdays at once. Then we have less exposure, and everybody's vaccinated except for me and my husband. And so my son was worried, and he's like, well, you know, I'm worried about the kids catching the virus. And I'm like, well, I thought that's why you got the vaccine. And he said, well, it doesn't actually prevent you from getting the virus. I said, well, what's the point of it then? And when you look at older people, their antibody response is much lower with the vaccine. And that's what they're not talking about. So Medicare, they just did a study where they went through CMS and Medicare, and they started looking at how many people, and you know, that's a huge system, how many of these Medicare patients that are fully vaccinated are testing positive. And it was like 60%. So more than the unvaccinated. And now they weren't quite as sick. But what I'm seeing is people go and get the vaccine, And they all seem to catch COVID immediately, like within a week of the vaccine. And of course, those people aren't counted as vaccinated. So if you've had your two shots and your booster, and you're only 3 days into your booster and you get COVID, they count you as unvaccinated because you've not hit the immunity point for the booster. Yeah. And I'm like, well, that's not right. But, you know, yeah. Here they are. And I think it just kind of waylays their immune system. And then if it's around, they catch it because you're not getting it from the vaccine for sure. But yeah. I'm sure. And you see it with flu. You know how many people will tell you they never get a flu shot because they got it once and they got the flu. Well, sure, because it whacks your immune system. And So it's just interesting because I was looking at this older population and waning immunity is like at 2 or 3 months for them. It still seems that if you survive the shot, you don't get as sick. But we've not yet evaluated, like, what does their immunity look like? So you've gotten your vaccines, you get COVID. Does it kind of short circuit your long-term antibody generation? And it looks like it does. They're not as immune once they catch it. Which is weird because if you've had it and you get just one vaccine, supposedly your immunity is better. So it's interesting that if you get vaccinated first and then catch it, it's worse. So I don't know what's going on with that thing, but I just,
because there's hardly any tests to like, it's gone through so fast because they said, oh, it's been tested so much. No, it hasn't. They don't know the effects of this on, like you said, the immunity. They don't know long-term effects because it hasn't been in the market and been out here like for enough for years down the road. What does it do? Other drugs and vaccines and stuff have gone through these trials. This is like the only one that has been like, bam, they make it out. Like, I think another one, oh, it was really rushed through, but there was still a process for it. This one has not gone through normal processes by any means.
Well, you know, it's funny because when somebody tells me they're like, oh, this is crazy. You know, I took it and I was fine. And I'm like, well, so you think, I mean, when you look at the studies, And you look at what evaluation was done. So, you know, you get the first jab, you know, you go through, and if you developed symptoms, so they had a symptom list and it had to be on the symptom list. You had to have two things on the symptom list and a positive test. We don't know what cycle threshold they used for the tests. We don't even know what they used for their placebo.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what did you, cause I think it was I can't remember which one used, I think the meningitis vaccine is their placebo. Cause they're like, if the people don't get a sore arm, they're going to know they got saline. And I'm like, no, saline gives you a sore arm. You could absolutely use saline. So what happens when you compare vaccine to vaccine is you make all of, cause the reason I figured it out was I started going through and I looked at the vaccine group versus the placebo group. And you would see like almost exactly the same amount of complaints of different things. And I'm like, that's crazy. You'll see some in the placebo group, but you never see the same numbers. And I'm like, why would people who got a saline injection be having exactly the same amount of, you know, days of terrible arm pain or whatever? This doesn't make sense. So I looked it up. I'm like, did they use a placebo? Well, with Moderna and Pfizer, we have no idea. And I think Johnson & Johnson used the meningitis vaccine. So that really makes it look like these effects are pretty even. And, you know, they do all these things and they lie to us. I'm like, look, if you make a viable vaccine that is safe, I'm in. And I think everyone would agree. You know, we all want life to go back to normal. You make me a safe vaccine that, you know, even using the old technology, I'd feel better about because we know how that works. But they're like, no, we're going to use a brand new technology and then we're going to lie to you about it at every opportunity. Yeah. And so I'm like, you know, it's not that we don't want to be vaccinated. It's that you just continually lie and all the lies makes us not trust you. And Dr. Fauci did this interview with this guy the other day. I can't remember his name. And this guy like had cojones of steel because he started asking questions that I would ask Dr. Fauci that no one else dare ask because, you know, Fauci is science. And, what the heck?
Yeah.
I'm like the ego on this guy, little man syndrome for sure. But he told him, he said, you know, I've lost faith in you. The country has lost faith in you. You've been wrong about this and this and this and this. And, you know, at what point will you consider resigning? And Dr. Fauci was like, oh, that's not going to happen. This is all, you know, well, all of that can be explained by evolving science. And I'm like, wow, I have never seen such a quick evolution of science. So like on Monday, you don't need a mask. But by Tuesday, the science has evolved to you needing two masks. And on Thursday, you know, the vaccinated don't. The vaccinated don't.
Oh no, I got two animals too. One's out the door, one's in her cage.
She never jumps up there, but she looks for mischief when I'm doing an interview. There's nothing up there. Stop it.
I know. It's like they always know whenever you're busy. And then even watching everybody else's interviews, like people like Dave and Nina or like whatever, like their dogs always bark or come in or cats or whatever. It's just they always know when you're busy. And it's like, leave me alone.
I used to say when my kids were little that there must be something in the phone that triggers some chemical in children's brains that they now immediately need you. They didn't need anything before, but now, you know, it's crucial. And I would be like, are you bleeding out your eyes? That's the guideline for bothering me on a phone call. Cause I didn't get on the phone.
It's like, do you see blood? Do you see large amounts of blood?
Right. Yeah.
Is anything sticking out that shouldn't be? Like, can you see any in part of your body that's supposed to be inside on the outside? If not, it's like mommy or daddy is busy.
Right. Did you poop out your intestines? No, then you're fine. You know? But anyway, so we were looking at all this stuff and he confronted Dr. Fauci and of course, Dr. Fauci cites shifting science. And I'm like, okay, let's give him that. Let's say, okay, that the thing is when you look at this virus, and I always try to give people the basics because it's all been so much fear mongering. When you look at this virus, it's an envelope virus. And so what that means is the virus has a shell and the shell is made of fat. And then on the outside of the shell are all these little pokey things that are the spike protein. And they go around the virus like this. And that's why they call it a coronavirus, because it looks like a crown. And so you've got you've got this lipid layer on the outside of it. Lipids just means fats. And think about when you're washing dishes, when you wash a greasy pan, you take it and you put it in the sink and then you put some dish soap in and all of the fat does this. Well, that's because soap has surfactants in it. And we've known this from the beginning. So because we know that surfactants in soap will disperse fat, this is why hand washing is so important. So when you wash your hands, that soap dissolves the outer layer of the virus, takes the spike proteins with it, and it can do nothing. And that's powerful information. And I'm like, when you tell people to wash their hands, tell them why, because you're making them feel
so out of control. I had no idea that. This is the first I've heard that. I'm like, I mean, even in science, I didn't know. I just knew you're always supposed to wash your hands. It's just like, don't.
Well, it's like anything else. Like if you tell me, Penny, you've got to get this piece of paper in my inbox by 3 o'clock every Tuesday. And you don't tell me why, I may or may not remember. But if you tell me, hey, if you don't get this in by 3 o'clock Tuesday, we can't pay you. Well, now that's linked to something.
Giving
important
a reason helps it to stay in your,
Right. And you realize the importance of it and that there will be an effect that will be bad for you. And so I would tell people, I'm like, look, we can totally disable it. Like people think the virus is alive and they use a lot of terminology like this will kill the virus. I'm like, you can't kill a virus. A virus isn't alive. So just to dispel, you know, all of the science that you're not learning, it's got this lipid outer layer that can be washed off. A virus cannot move. So if you go out and you touch something and you've got the virus on your hand and you touch your cheek, that's where it's going to stay until gravity acts on it or you wash your face. It can't crawl up into your nose. It can't crawl down into your lungs. It's not like bacteria can do that, but viruses cannot. A virus, if there are two viruses in my hand, they cannot reproduce. There will always only be two. They can't reproduce outside of a host. They don't breathe. They don't grow. They're not alive. Well, once you know that, you're like, okay, this is much less scary. Because you've got people that think, like, if I cough, this thing can just fly an endless distance and infect someone else. And I'm like, what? Yeah. That's crazy. Why don't they dispel that? People are terrified. You know, and so very like at the beginning, because, you know, I got COVID early, March 2020. At the beginning, I started doing all this research and I was finding things on like PubMed and the National Institute of Health, where they post their studies. And I was looking at the first SARS-CoV and they did great research that showed povidone-iodine, which is just betadine, completely dissolves the outer layer, right? So I'm like, well, wait a minute. We use povidone-iodine to sterilize surgical sites. It's used on the body. I wonder if it can be used internally. And so I got on and I looked it up, and they had already done all this research with MERS and everything else, that if you made a 0.5% solution of povidone iodine and you spray it into the nose, it off gases for 3 hours and it blocks the ACE receptors, and then nothing can get in. You're not going to get COVID. And so if you're out, you just use it every 3 hours and at least your sinuses are protected. And then we learned that mouthwash also has surfactants. And even when we use it in patients who are sick, it diminishes their viral load. And so I'm like, why aren't they, you know, we saw this like in Japan and in Korea, South Korea. Yeah. They do this every year at flu season. And it's just a common thing that is, you know, you're just your nasal hygiene during cold and flu season. And they routinely use these betadine type things. And so, you know, I had kind of developed this big following when I got COVID, because instead of answering 30 phone calls a day about how I was doing, I would do a live update on Facebook, you know, and as I got sicker and sicker, it's just super scary. If anybody wants to see, if you go to my Rumble channel, which is COVID-19 Warrior.
Oh yeah. All your stuff's going to be, I'm going to have it in the links and stuff below. Yep.
So there's a 3-part series on there. And if you go to part 3, there are, I put a video clip in there of what I looked like when I had COVID, and it's just terrifying. And, so I had done all of these updates, and as I was learning things, I was updating other people, you know, and then I couldn't get, so I had gotten my, I called my doctor and I said, hey, President Trump's talking about hydroxychloroquine, azithromycin, zinc. Would you be willing to prescribe that? And so I think at like 3 weeks in, something like that, maybe a little sooner, he prescribed it. Well, the regimen we found called for, you know, a higher dose day one and then half that dose for the remaining 4 days. Yeah. So I took that dose the first day and I was already really sick on oxygen. I was in bad shape. And the next day after taking that, I was able to take my oxygen off and take a shower. I mean, just that my appearance was night and day. And so it was so crazy. And I thought, well, that's, you know, this is just, I'm having a good day or something. But then I continued to get better till I got to day 3 on the lower dose. And then I relapsed. So I called my doctor. It's a Saturday and I didn't want to call him, but I called him and I said, hey, I'm sicker than I was. We're going to have to go back to that higher dose. So he calls it in, and the pharmacy never like sends a text or calls and says it's ready. And I thought, well, shoot, I don't want to bother him on a weekend. You know, I'll wait till Monday. I'll be okay. Cause I still had some medicine left. So Monday I called the pharmacy and they're like, no, we're not going to fill it because you haven't had a COVID test. Well, I got sick March 12th. You couldn't get one. And so when I got sick, I called the COVID hotline and they pick up and they say poison control. And I'm like, oh, sorry, wrong number. And she's like, no, are you calling the COVID hotline? And I said, yes. And she's like, okay, yeah, you've got the right. Good job, Governor Beshear. I tell her the whole thing. And I said, look, I have this rare autoimmune thing where I'm in remission now, but over a 2.5-year time period, not too long ago, I just kept going into anaphylaxis and complete respiratory failure. And I was on the ventilator 18 times in 2.5 years. So I've got significant lung damage. I've got an order in place that I don't want to be put on the vent again. So I need to know if I've got this. And she's like, well, have you been out of the country? And I'm like, no, I just like told you the whole, were you? I said, no. Yeah. And she's like, have you been exposed to somebody that you know has COVID? And I'm like, I don't know who has COVID. She's like, well, I don't know. I said, well, if you don't know, how would I know?
I don't know. Do you know? I don't know.
I'm like, obviously, if the only way you can catch it is from someone else, basically, I probably have been exposed to someone, but they refused to test 3 different times. And by the time I could go get a test, I was on oxygen, and they don't give you portable oxygen because you're not supposed to leave. And I couldn't go get a test. So they're basing on, they're like, well, the Board of Pharmacy wrote these new mandates and you have to have a positive COVID-19 test to get this. Well, we print out the mandates. They don't say anything like that. And so I called Walgreens Pharmacy. They wouldn't fill it. Called Kroger Pharmacy. Kroger Pharmacy would not only not fill the hydroxychloroquine, they wouldn't fill the antibiotic. And their excuse was that they had to save it for the hospital. And I'm like, look, I've been a nurse 18 years. I'm not stupid. Kroger Pharmacy does not supply the hospital. They have an internal pharmacy. This is nuts. And I said, do you have it? And she's like, yeah, we have it. But she just refused to fill it. So I called a local pharmacist. And she's like, you know, what the mandate looks like to us feels like a veiled threat. And so we're just not filling it. And I assumed wrongly
fear,
that meant no fear. One would yep. fill it. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, we're just doomed. Nobody's going to fill it. And it turned out Walmart would have filled it, but we didn't know that. And so I get sicker and sicker. And in the meantime, all these people that have been following me, and it's in the thousands, people from other countries, they started a Facebook campaign to get me this medicine. So they got on with the Board of Pharmacy, and you can't post on the page, but you can post in comments. So they would post comments and put a picture of me. They're like, this woman needs your help. She's dying. Same thing to the governor. The governor never responded. He never even responded to personal messages. You know, we need you to intervene. We need your help. She was doing better. You know, we need to be able to use this drug. Not a word. And I would watch him every day, and it would just go all over me, because he'd get up on that stage and do his best Eeyore impression. Yeah. And he's like, oh, woe is me. There were 8 deaths today. And I'm like, listen, Eeyore, you don't get to act like this is terrible and tragic when you're standing in the way of treatment. And so it was like the 6th day into this part of it. It was, you know, much further along in my illness, but I got on and I was like, look, guys, it's not going to happen. You know, it's tragic, but sometimes it takes tragedy to bring change. Yeah. And I don't want to die. But if I do, I need for it to mean something. I can't just have this be meaningless. So if this happens, maybe a light will be shown on my situation and it won't happen to anybody else. And that would at least be some good that would come of it. And I was just very tearful. And you know, I thanked them for just all their support and their love. And I said, you know what? So there's a story in the Bible that always just ticked me off. And it was the story of Job. You know, so Job is this guy who loves the Lord and by all accounts is just, you know, one of God's great people. And God and Satan get in basically a pissing match about Job. And Satan's like, well, you know, he only loves you because you're so good to him. If calamity fell on him, you know, he'd curse you. And God's like, no, that's not true. Go ahead and do your worst. Just don't kill him. I'm like, who does that? Like, this is what I never could understand it. I'm like, that's just such a, I wouldn't say, oh, my kid loves me. Okay. Well, if everything went bad for them, you know, then let's see if they love you. It just felt like a game to me and I never understood it. And so I'm laying in bed that day and I'm talking to these people knowing, you know, that I don't have maybe a few days left. Cause by then I was in, so I couldn't get any like labs or x-rays. Everybody refused to let me come in. And so I had ordered urine test strips, medical grade, so I could kind of see what was going on. So we knew my liver was failing. We knew my kidneys were failing. Definitely, I had viral sepsis by this point. I'd lost 14 pounds in muscle mass, had 2 bed sores, had broken out in shingles, pneumonia in both lungs. My pacemaker was almost completely pacing me, you know, because my heart was just so weak at that point. And so anyway, I was thinking about Lot or Job, and there's this part where everybody's telling Job, just curse God and die. And Job says to God, though you slay me, still I'll trust you. And it meant something to me that day. And I'm like, oh my goodness, I can't believe you misunderstood that reference the whole time. So back when I had all of the autoimmune respiratory failures, the first time it happened, I coded and I popped out of my body and watched what happened and went up and was with God and the whole thing. And I'm like, oh, Job says, though you slay me, still I'll trust you, because Job knows either way he's okay. He's not this body, you know? So even if the body dies, Job will be with the Lord and he knows he's going to be okay either way. So he's like, if there's something you're trying to prove through this or some lesson you're needing to teach your people through me, okay, I'm trusting that you've got a bigger purpose for this, because I know either way I'm okay. And I was like, oh, wow. So that kind of gave me this peace. So I told everybody I loved him. I get off, I go to sleep. And my husband calls at 4:45. He says, get on Facebook. The whole world is looking for you. So I get on, and a friend of mine from Maine or Connecticut, Facebook friend, had gotten hold of the guy at the Board of Pharmacy. And she's like, he wants to talk to you. So I call him. His name's Larry, and I've called him since. And he said, I don't understand why they won't give you this drug. And I said, well, because they are viewing your mandate as a veiled threat against their license if they do it. And I said, and then the other ones are just lying. I don't know what their problem is. So anyway, he said, I can't make them do it, because a pharmacist can act on their own ethics to not fill something. But by 7 o'clock, he called me. So he stayed after work and he said, hey, it's ready at Walgreens. Have your husband go up and get it. And we got the drug and over 53 days, I finally came off oxygen and stopped having fevers. And so then I really started digging in and doing all this research, and and I would do teaching, and I'm like, okay, guys, here's what I found out today. You know, if your vitamin D level is under 20 and you are in the hospital, your risk of mortality is almost 96%. If it's under 30, if it's under 30, it's 86.1%. If it's over 30, your risk of death, 4%. Why are we not screaming this from the rooftops? But I try to put that up on Facebook, down it comes. And I'm using the government's own research.
Yeah.
I'm like, how are you censoring the CDC? This is their data. But you couldn't put it up. You couldn't talk about vitamin C. You couldn't talk about zinc, quercetin, anything. And, you know, so we, so I had to make like a COVID-19 warrior group to get everybody in one place. Yeah. And the censorship just got to the point where I couldn't speak. I was in jail all the time in Facebook. And so finally I was like, okay, I'm done. I can't keep fighting the censorship. I need to take a break from this. And so I kind of stepped away. And then I learned about Rumble and some other social media sites. And I'm like, okay, you know, people are needing help still. I got to get back on. And they were all like super understanding about me just kind of needing just this emotional stop because it had been so hard.
Everyone has to take a break from this stuff at some point, because otherwise it's like, it'll run you dry, because it's like you got to kind of stop and then just kind of take a break and stuff. So
Well, and even like the whole time I was sick, I taught, I did a video almost every day, and they were long videos. And you can see me, like I'm wearing my CPAP, I've got oxygen hooked up, I'm stopping every third word to breathe. And so what's funny is, like, as I got better, Chris Cuomo tested positive, right? And so I'm watching Chris Cuomo, and I don't know anything about Chris Cuomo to that point, other than that he's on CNN and that he's Governor Cuomo's brother, right? So I'm sitting here and I'm watching one day, and he comes on, and you know, he's talking about how he was just so feverish that he chipped a tooth because he was shivering so hard.
Yeah.
And as a nurse, you can't turn off nurse mode. Like, within a couple minutes of meeting you, I already know where I'm going to put the IV. I know which handed you are. I can't not notice it. So I'm watching him and I'm like, wow, his respiratory rate's fine. He's not having to stop to catch his breath. He's not coughed once. He's not flushed. His breathing sounds are clear. I don't hear any audible wheezing or anything. This guy's not that sick. But I'm like, you know, maybe he's super tough. Maybe he's tougher than me. I don't know. Even so, you could look at me and you knew I was sick. So I'm and no amount of makeup would have fixed it. So then one day he comes on and he says he's gone to have this x-ray done, right? So he's gone and had this x-ray, and he is such a ham and he is so melodramatic. And so I'm watching him, right? So he's sitting here, Dr. Gupta's here, I'm guessing split screen sort of thing, and his x-ray's up. And so they show this x-ray, and you see kind of what looks like, he described it as smoke, but it looks like kind of webbing, white webbing through the lungs. And he says, yeah, I was standing there and was looking at this with my pulmonology friends, which I'm guessing means pulmonologist. I don't know, but he's looking at this with them and he's like, what is that? And they told me, that's the virus. And I'm like, what the heck are you talking about? I'm like, those are the capillaries that feed blood to the lungs. You need an electron microscope to see a virus. You're full of crap. And he's so dramatic about it. He's like, you know, it wants
he's an
your
idiot.
Life.
He really, right? He's an idiot.
He's an absolute
pretty much just like his brother. I mean, no, he's an idiot.
It's pitiful. Well, the thing is, they're on CNN. They have access to fact checkers and you've got right here, Dr. Sanjay Gupta paid $5 million a year to be their medical analyst, right? And so he's sitting there and I'm looking at this chest x-ray and I'm like, that is a perfect chest x-ray. I mean, I worked in vent unit, so I know what a good chest x-ray is. And so probably would most nurses. I'm thinking these people like are so far removed from society, they don't realize healthcare professionals watch or that they're going to be caught in this huge lie. So they show you the lateral aspect of the chest x-ray, which is, you know, from the side view. Mm-hmm. And so Dr. Gupta makes sure to say that he's not diagnosing him on the air. But he points to this
covering
thing.
His tail.
Right. Yeah. He points to this thing in the middle and he says, this is this looks like it might be an infiltrate. It gets me, right? I'm like, that's his heart. That's his heart. You can see the four chambers. That's his heart. They pay you $5 million a year You were a neurologist or neurosurgeon. You can't identify the heart on a chest x-ray. Like, you could see the great vessels and everything. It was just clear that's what it was. And there's nobody here for me to, and I want to be like, oh, do you see that? These people are crazy. They're like flat out lying to you. So what was funny was the whole world did see it. And there were medical professionals watching, and they all went after Dr. Yeah. Gupta on Twitter. And apparently then they have edited that. But so I was talking about it the other day, and they're like, no, that never happened. And I'm like, no, it absolutely happened. There are actually YouTube videos that review the x-ray, but they've taken it, they've edited out of their archive. And so the other funny thing was, Chris knows that his wife keeps an online journal. She's like some crystal weirdo. I don't know what she does. I'm sure she's delightful, but she's just a little odd. And so she keeps this online journal. And in the journal, she writes, Chris had a chest x-ray today and it was clear. And I'm like, so you come home from having a chest x-ray, you tell your wife that your x-ray is fine, and then you get on national TV and tell everybody that you have pneumonia while showing us a completely normal chest x-ray. You're horrible. There are people dying from this. There are people like me who were truly sick that could not get help. And you're doing drama for ratings, and you, when you do this, you insinuate how stupid you think we all are.
Like, and that little thing of him saying that, oh, he stayed in the basement the whole time or whatever. You know, he did it. They've got
groundhog moment. What the heck was that?
I'm like, honestly, I had John DeLemmy on my show last week, and he gets so ticked off at the Cuomos because he's like, they make Italians look bad. Because he is. And he's like, they make us Italians. He's like, I don't like them. They make us look bad. Because they are such idiots. And it's like, they're so stupid.
He's such a hypocrite. And that's what bothers me. I'm like, if you're going to do stuff, just do it and be straight about it. I can at least appreciate that's just who you are. But don't lie to me. So we know that he had his elderly mother staying with him. And Governor Cuomo kept saying, you got to get mom out of there. You're high risk for catching this. We don't want mom to get sick. So he's telling all of us not to go near our elderly people while his mom is staying with him. You have to stay isolated. And then we get reports that he went, and I love how CNN does this. So he's got a house he's building 30 miles away, and the construction has been shut down because of COVID. He puts his wife and his kids in the car, no masks, drives 30 miles to this site, is standing outside, and this biker's like, hey, aren't you supposed to be in quarantine?
Exactly.
Chris is so sick that he runs after this guy to beat him up, shouting at him, and his wife has to get in between them. And the guy makes a police report, and then Chris talks about it on his podcast, and still, and CNN's like, he was in his own yard. I'm like, oh, that's dirty. Yes, he owns the property, but he was not in the yard that he was quarantined to. And I'm like, which further shows how stupid they think we are. And
I know.
And then they stage this groundhog emergence, at which point his wife has now tested positive and his kid is positive. And he infected both of them because he didn't follow the rules, and he still has a job. I'm like, President Trump walked out on a balcony when he got home from the hospital, took his mask off, and waved to people that were probably, how far away? I'm pretty sure you probably couldn't get close to the quarters of the president. And they were like, oh, they were just gnashing their teeth and tearing their garments. And they're like, he took his mask off outside. And I'm like, Chris Cuomo.
But then they're applauding Cuomo. Oh, yay.
Right?
Think in the head.
And, and it's so funny because I go down and I read like the comments to Chris, and they're like, oh my gosh, Chris, we're praying for you, pull through. So before he ever has symptoms, he's like, he's just tested positive 10 minutes before, and he's telling Dr. Gupta on air he's got it. And he says, Dr. Gupta's like, well, Chris, you're going to beat this. You're a warrior. I'm like, no, he's not a warrior. I was a warrior. I was sick 53 days. This guy isn't even sick yet.
What he is the word that I wouldn't use on my show, but the P word.
Yeah.
Rhymes with wuss. That's what he is. And like I said, I won't use it on my show, but I'm like, that's what that guy is.
Exactly. And you read his wife's journal and she's like, we all went for a family bike ride and Chris did so great. And I'm like, you're riding a bike? I'm like, I'm having falls on the way to the bathroom because I'm so weak.
I know.
you know, I'm having hallucinations.
Like you can barely have a hard time breathing. And then this guy, out here biking. And I'm like, yeah. And used all the exercise.
I had 104.9 temperature for 3 days sustained. We could not get it down. And I was 102 every day of my illness or higher, you know, it just was all over the place. And it just was such an insult. And then to have him tell us how to live, you know, and what we should do, and that we need to obey quarantine and we need to wear masks. And I'm like, not a word from you, not a word. You know, you're an absolute liar. And look what you're putting people through. You're scaring them to death. You know, he's like, his dad visited him and you know, his dad's dead. His dad came to him and sat on the edge of the bed, you know, I guess to support Chris through this awful illness that enabled him to go on bike rides and rides in his car and, you know, try to beat local citizens up. And I'm like, you did not see your dad. You're so full of crap. And I'm fed up to hear with being lied to. I'm, you know, this, the whole new thing with, we're just going to fire nurses. We're going to fire whoever we have to fire because they won't get this jab. And then you've got this, like,
and dealing with people's livelihoods. That's the thing. Even when they were telling people stay at home, easy for these people to say when they make millions of dollars a year than for single parents out here who they're trying to send their kids to school. They're trying to do the best. Some like single moms or single dads working multiple jobs and they're telling them you need to stay at home. Easy for them to say, and they're depriving them of things like hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, things that'll work fine. Those Z-packs or whatever they're called. I mean, just basic necessities. And they're depriving them of that. Just, and it's so hypocritical on so many levels. And like I said, we can't obviously be definitive on what their motives are, but their actions show they don't care that people are dying. And then honestly, I'd say probably some of them want people to die.
Oh yeah.
Well, honestly, they could probably say, you can't say that. You can't do motives. I can judge on actions. And that's what I've seen with these people, whether it's Fauci or Cuomo or the Democrats and Republicans, a lot of these rhinos, it's ridiculous.
They've said it. That's what gets me is you don't have to infer it. They're saying it, you know. You don't deserve to work. You don't deserve to feed your family because you've not gotten this jab. And I'm like, why doesn't anybody ask the obvious question? Why
it's dehumanizing people. Right. It's making them to where they're not humans. Yeah.
Right. You've got a nurse who's worked through this entire pandemic, probably has already had COVID, quite likely. And now she is being told that she has to get a vaccine that will not stop her from contracting or transmitting the infection so that she doesn't contract or transmit the infection to people in the hospital who've been vaccinated, who can also can contract and transmit the infection. She's going to be fired because she won't take a shot that won't stop these things. And the people who've taken the shot that won't stop these things continue to be allowed to work. And we were already short-staffed. And now we're going into flu season. And what are you going to do? You know, we already are boarding people in the emergency room, their entire hospital stay, because we can't get them up to a room because there's no nurses to take care of them. So like when I started doing this, we call it underground nightingales. So when I figured out my protocol, because I'm like, I have to write a protocol that assumes that nobody's going to be able to get prescription drugs, because I think that's what it's going to come down to. And that is what it's coming down to. And I'm like, I've got to figure out how can I get people through this, knowing that we can't rely on any prescriptions being filled. And so 248 people to date have used the protocol, and I've not had one hospitalization or death, not one, you know. And I'm like, it's quercetin, vitamin D, C, zinc. We know that there are antihistamines that are antiviral against COVID, chlorpheniramine maleate, 4 milligrams. You can buy it on Amazon. You can buy it at the grocery store. Taken in those first days, with Pepcid, you can completely stop the infection. Fexofenadine, which is Allegra, completely antiviral. N-acetylcysteine, good luck buying it, because when all the studies came out that N-acetylcysteine, which is a supplement, stopped COVID and it healed the lungs and restored lung function, even broke down the fibrosis that was happening in the lungs. What did the Federal Trade Commission do? They sent a letter to Amazon and told them they had to stop carrying it, because it's a prescription drug. Well, that's been true for 40 years. What's now changed? Well, it'll help with COVID. So we got to take it away.
Exactly.
You know, so I'm like, you guys are monsters. You know, you won't let us have ivermectin. This is my favorite. Merck, those suck egg dogs, they've made this new antiviral, right? that we know the ingredients in it are cancer causing. They also make ivermectin. So they've been, you know, rallying cry against ivermectin because they know pretty soon they're going to have a patented drug they can push out that's $30 a pill. And they don't want to mess that up with ivermectin that we know is safe. And I'm just
and
like
very affordable. Right? I, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and they're making like this, they're like, well, people are taking horse paste. And I'm like, let me tell you something. People wouldn't be taking horse paste if you would just let them have the prescription. That's desperation.
Exactly.
And pretty soon horse paste is going to be under prescription. You're not going to be able
probably
to just go track your supply and buy it. And they're like, oh, we've had all these overdoses. Turned out that wasn't true. Poison control is inundated with calls on ivermectin overdose. Not true. And I'm like, do you think at this point, Fauci said to me, you shouldn't go outside today because the grass is green. I'd be like, I'm not so sure. I'd go out and check because everything he says is BS, you know? And I'm like, here's the thing. He says there's not enough data on ivermectin, right? You know, this study wasn't double blind, placebo controlled, blah, 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 blah. If you look at a meta-analysis, it 83% lowers your risk of getting COVID if you take it on exposure. 63% of people do very well when they take it, even late cases. It's the numbers are higher, but we're estimating down. Even if it's not a magic bullet, there's no drug. There's no one drug that's going to fix COVID because it's a virus. We always have to have a multiple approach to it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, even if it only saved 40% of people, how many people would still be alive? So
exactly.
He said this, and he says this. He's such a monster. He says this knowing that he influenced the remdesivir trial. So they made these outlines for like, what was, you know, what are your end measures going to be? You know, did it reduce mortality? Did it reduce need for mechanical ventilation or ECMO? That's their guideline. Now he says that they did not unblind this study, but halfway through, they decided to change the goals. Why would you change the goals unless you knew it wasn't working? There's no reason. So they go in, they change the outcome measures, and then he comes on and he's like, it's the new, not it might help. It's the new standard of care and the only care you'll be allowed to get in the hospital, right?
Even basic statistics show if you do that, the whole thing is void and you got to start completely back from scratch because you can't change it in the middle because it completely taints everything.
But you're doing a study and you figure out what your outcome is going to be. Then you write your outcome goals and you realize you're not going to hit the mark. And so it didn't reduce mortality at all. So this is it's even worse than that. They used this drug for Ebola. And they had to stop. There were four drugs they were using in an Ebola trial. Yeah. They had to pull remdesivir because 53% of the people who took it died. And he's like, we know it's safe and effective from previous studies. I'm like, you don't think I'm going to look that study up? And so he knew all of this. Then he goes even further and he unblinds the study and offers everybody who's in the placebo group the drug. Well, now the remdesivir studies that you see are remdesivir versus remdesivir, 5 versus 10 days. I can't tell anything like that. Like if you compare water to water, I don't know. Water for 10 days, I don't, you know, water for 5 days work just as well. That's basically
you have to have a control group. I learned that in like middle school science. Yep. I mean, elementary science, even like plants, like, okay, we're going to do this, the plant, it's all like the soil, the plants in the soil, the seeds in the soil. It's like, okay, now this one, we're just going to leave it. No sun, no water. This one, we're going to give it like sun, but no water. This one, we're going to give it water, but no sun. And this one, we're going to give it both.
Right.
Basic elementary science.
Well, and they're doing it with the vaccines now. They've offered the vaccine to all of the placebo group. So now you're just going to have placebo group or drug group to drug group comparison. And we're not going to have any data, you know, so they stopped collecting data on infections that don't result in hospitalization or death because there were so many breakthrough infections. And then, you know, they always want it both ways. Fauci comes back and he's like, well, we can't base the booster shot need just on hospitalization and death. What about the breakthrough cases and people that don't go to the hospital? I'm like, oh, the ones you stopped counting because it was making your vaccine look so bad. Now you're worried about them? You're a horrible human being. And it's even worse than that. So when they designed these trials for hydroxychloroquine, they intentionally designed, so the most you should take of hydroxychloroquine in a day like if you're taking it for rheumatoid arthritis, they take 200 milligrams once or twice a day. When it's used to treat other kinds of viruses, sometimes they'll go as high as 600. We know that 1800 milligrams a day can result in lethal toxicity. How much did they decide to give these very sick patients day one? 2400 milligrams. And they're like, oh no, they weren't poisoned, because if they were overdosed, they would have died. Well, let me tell you something. It takes 50 days to clear half of the hydroxychloroquine you took that day. 50 days. Oh. If you can't even dialyze it out. It just takes that long.
So it's going to continue being in their body for a month, almost two months. Right.
That's why
it
works.
You don't think that's going to cause damage. Yeah.
Right. So I'm like, if they died at any point in the 50 days of that study, it was likely from an overdose of hydroxychloroquine.
Poisoning.
I think it was either.
Not from the drug, from putting too much of the drug. Because it's like the phrase, too much of a good thing usually isn't a good thing.
Right. Yeah. If you eat, you know, a pound of salt, you're going to die. If you drink 10 gallons of water, you're going to die. You know, the dose makes the poison is how it goes. And so they intentionally set this trial up. And it was Dr. Landry. So I don't remember whether it was the Solidarity trial or the recovery trial. So they had all these deaths and they stopped the trial because hydroxychloroquine was so dangerous, right? So a reporter sat down with Dr. Landry, who should be shot in front of everybody. This man is evil. I mean, you kill hundreds of people intentionally. This man's evil. He's a serial killer. And then it wasn't just this study, the study in Brazil. Yeah. There were all these studies that intentionally overdosed people. So a reporter sits down with him and he says, you know, I'm just curious, how did you come to that dosage? And so, you know, he's like, what would be a toxic dose of hydroxychloroquine? And Dr. Landry says, oh, like 8 to 10 times that. I don't know. I'd have to look it up. The study's done. He doesn't know what a toxic dose of this drug is, but it gets worse. He then says, you know, we based it on the doses you see with amoebic dysentery. And I'm like, we don't use hydroxychloroquine to treat amoebic dysentery. We use hydroxyquinolone. And those would have been appropriate doses for that drug. So I'm like, this guy wrote this trial, right? He's not conducting it. Trials are happening in all these hospitals around the world under this person who wrote the trial design, right? They're blinded. So the doctor doesn't know he's giving a lethal overdose of this drug. The nurse doesn't know she's giving a lethal overdose. They now have all been part of this murder, basically. And he doesn't even know which drug he's using. So he's either an idiot or he's a horrible liar, but he's still out there walking the streets. He's still doing clinical research, you know? And I'm just like, if they tell you to take it, just do whatever the opposite of that is. Like if they say, don't do this, you're right over the target. That's the thing you should do. So when they're maligning hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin, and I read a post last night, I was reading some study that was comparing the efficacy of ivermectin versus the new Merck drug. And it was pretty straightforward. And somebody put this comment and they're like, well, the thing is, you know, there's really no safe anti-parasitic drug. You know, you can, even at 3 milligrams, a person could have neurological problems. And I'm like, this is the problem. It's people like this. You know, they're like, there's this slight chance you could have this. So instead, let's sit around with our thumbs up our butts and watch thousands of people die of COVID because they've got a risk of this small thing. And I'm like, you know, and they're all down on ivermectin. And I'm like, how many drugs have you all approved that we've then seen the lawsuit advertisements come on because you withheld information and people died? And so this person makes this argument and I'm like, I can't stop myself. I have to say something, you know? So I get in there and I'm like, what are you talking about? I said, I've never seen adverse event. And I've been a nurse 18 years. I had one kid that was the biggest dirt eater you ever met. He always had worms. He was on Stramectol, like with his breakfast cereal. He was fine. And I'm like, let's look at the treatments that are available. You can get a shot that won't keep you from getting it or transmitting it. And that's going to wane at 3 or 4 months. And you're going to have to keep getting them. We're going to keep triggering this immune response. And pretty soon you're going to have immune exhaustion about the time we get into flu season. Now you've got, so H1N1 last year killed more children than it did in the H1N1 pandemic. Yet, did you hear anything about that? No, not a word. And I'm like,
we're going into this flu season now. So it's like, if these people who've had the vaccine, who've had this and who've had all that on the, like the two doses and then the booster now, I mean, what
and
are
they're
going to
get a flu shot.
What
too.
Are we going to see? I'm going to have to get off here in a second. I mean, I could continue talking to you honestly for hours. Like I said, I'm definitely going to have you back on, but thank you so much for coming on. Honestly, it's been so much fun, like having you on here. I'm definitely going to have you back on. I'll put your contact info in like your email and stuff. So that way my listeners can contact you if they like want to ask questions or whatever and stuff. But thank you again so much, buddy. This is why you and these nurses need to be the new doctors. It's like you do need to be Dr. Penny, because you guys need to be the new doctors, because we need to get then these ones out of the way. And then we need to get you guys to be the new doctors, because I mean, you all are awesome. Yes.
Thank you.
Alrighty. Thanks again so much, Penny. It was great having you.
Thanks.
Thank you for watching the Red Patriot Show. To find more of my content, resources, and where you can find all of my video platforms, as well as all the social media outlets I use, go to www.theredpatriotshow.com. That's www.theredpatriotshow.com. See y'all later.